Hello, and welcome back to Bench to Bedside. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Firth, Executive Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer of the Research Institute. In this three-part series of our podcast, we're focusing on the first centers of emphasis at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. My guest today is Dr. Flora Winston, founder and co-scientific director of the Center for Injury Research and Prevention. Dr. Winston established the Center for Injury Research and Prevention in 1997. This dynamic team pursues innovative solutions to prevent injury in children, youth, and young adults through rigorous research and collaboration to improve product design, policy, and education. In other words, they take a research action to impact approach. Welcome, Dr. Winston. It's hard to believe, but it's over 26 years since you founded the Center for Injury Research and Prevention at CHOP. We know that as CIRP for short. So can you wind back the clock and tell us what was the catalyst for starting CIRP?
So the catalyst for the start of the Center for Injury Research and Prevention was the death of a child. That often is how our work starts. There was a 20-day-old who arrived dead in the emergency department, and this was the first case of a child who died from an airbag. And that led me as an engineer and as a pediatrician to really start thinking about, are we really thinking about children in the context of cars? There had been some child passenger safety laws, but in terms of research and data, child-focused crash surveillance wasn't a thing. So where we looked at our role at the time, and it has pretty much stayed in this role, is providing the information, the rigorous, credible information that's needed to advance the safety and the recovery from injury for children and young people, particularly as they play, as they walk, as they travel, wherever they are, we want to keep them safe. If they do get hurt, we want to be there to help them.
And looking now compared to then, how has pediatric injury research evolved since you started CIRP here at CHOP?
How things have evolved is early on, we were very much in the prevention space, particularly in traffic injury prevention. How do we, given a crash, reduce the severity of a child's injury? So when we think about prevention from a public health perspective, the first is we prevent the event, the crash. Then we reduce the severity of injuries given the event. And then we ensure proper resuscitation, recovery, treatment, reintegration, and we prevent recidivism of having the thing happen again. We were in this unique role of being able to create a child-focused crash surveillance system that provided most of the data that went behind all the laws for children in booster seats, regulations, new product design, programs, education, so many things. Because the data weren't there, people were making it up or it wasn't happening. And so that was really a major effort for many years. We got to a point and said two things. They're the other sides. Okay, some children were still being hurt. What are we doing to help them? And then how do we prevent the crashes altogether? So we moved in those two directions next. The first direction we went in was post-traumatic stress disorder. How do we manage that? That has turned into this huge program of trauma-informed care across the whole hospital and hospitals across the country. The other side was more about adolescent crashes. So we started focusing on teens and how to prevent crashes. We then moved further from there to now starting to look at other causes of injury, particularly violence. And we're very proud of the Center for Violence Prevention. We keep bringing rigor and relevant research to advance the safety of children and their recovery from injury. And most notably, recovery, our huge area that we're doing now is around concussion and traumatic brain injury. I could keep going on about all of this, but where we always are is in four ways. We're responsive to what needs to be done, we're proactive, we're collaborative, and we want to get that information out to as many people as possible.
From what you've described, CIRP brings research to impact, whether that's changing how we design products or how we partner with industry to design products to prevention or what happens after injuries. You really complete that spectrum. Given that research to impact, are there any SERP research projects that you're particularly proud of because you were able to make that connection from research to actually changing policy that would help prevent injuries to children or improve outcomes for children?
Yes, I there's several. The most famous one in particular is we found that children were promoted from car seats to booster seats at too young an age to seatbelt or nothing at all. And so when we started our work, many children were unrestrained in cars. And if they were restrained, they were restrained by seatbelts, which are designed for adults. Children's legs are a little shorter. They sit a little differently. The seatbelts don't fit them well. And so they need child restraints so they can be protected in cars. Our work helped to better design the vehicles, helped to change the regulations for how things were being tested, particularly around airbags in children who might be small and where they are, and change laws. Our work, in partnership with sharing the message to the American Academy of Pediatrics and others through a very strategic communication campaign, 48 state laws were changed, as well as two federal laws. Similarly, there was a resolution that every third week in October is National Teen Driver Safety Week. There are upgrades in graduated driver licensing laws. So a lot of laws in the last 15, 20 years that relate to children and teens in vehicles were related to us. What I'm proud of is this unique partnership using the data to be the voice for children in design. We have a unique National Science Foundation-funded industry university cooperative research center that brings together companies, federal agencies, nonprofits that fund a body of work to advance the safety of children. And what's been very interesting about that is that it evolves as the technology evolves to make sure that children are still considered. So our work now is about children in autonomous cars. How do we protect children in different seating positions when they can lie down and sit differently? Or what happens if there's no adult in the car at all? To start thinking about the children are not an afterthought. They're thought of from the very beginning of the design. That's the shift that is more than policy.
That's a remarkable track record to be proud of for you and all your collaborators. Where do you anticipate the future is heading for pediatric injury research?
There's so many things going on right now. Just the part about where the field hasn't changed. It's still invisible. Injuries are thought of as part of childhood, something that's going to happen. We would never think of that with many of the infections that children get. We don't think that it's inevitable that children are going to get chicken pox or that children are going to get measles. These are not considered inevitabilities anymore. But for some reason, that same mindset of prevention has not been translated to injury. So unfortunately, the message still has to be that we can prevent these things and we can reduce their severity. And the cool part of what I see is going to happen, we could also treat them in ways we couldn't. One of the most challenging parts of injury and why I care about it so much is the brains are often affected with injuries. And we have very few good treatments related to brain injury. That's going to be a big area. We are well poised at this hospital to make dramatic differences in pediatric readiness, in treatment in the outpatient setting, in treatment in the intensive care unit, in rehab, in all these areas. And all of them will involve novel therapies and devices. And I think we're really well situated to make those changes. I'm really excited to see particularly what's happening in neurocritical care, in resuscitation, and of course in concussion. A lot of amazing work my colleagues are doing. It's fabulous. The other areas around violence, there is, again, that inevitability that children are going to be exposed to violence. And what I love is the work that the Center for Violence Prevention is doing that is changing that narrative to say, no, actually, there are things we can do to reduce children's exposure to violence. There are things we can do that if a child has been exposed to violence, we can reduce their negative outcomes. We can reduce bullying. We can reduce PTSD. We can manage a lot of this stuff.
You're crystal clear on the importance of these issues, and you developed and built this program over more than a quarter of a century now, which is a wonderful thing. Can you tell us why the Research Institute has CHOP has been an ideal place to examine pediatric injury and prevention and try to have impact on child health?
Well, I think that at our core, we remain true to a mission that we are the voice for children when no one else will be. Our goal is to make sure that children can grow up to reach their full potential. And so every step of the way, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia has been behind that. Early on in my career as a pediatrician and engineer, public health researcher, people didn't necessarily understand my methods because they were different, but they invested in it and they thought it was important and they stood behind it, whether it was helping with the publicity and making sure that we got the right messages out to where we needed to get, fabulous work there, investing in the infrastructure that we needed to make things happen when we couldn't get the funding elsewhere, or most importantly, even lobbying and helping us to get these messages out so that we could change the laws. It's been an ideal place because at the core, we want to improve the lives of children.
SERP's researchers have a broad multidisciplinary background. You have engineers, you have public health experts, you have data analytics. How has that team approach to science really helped you achieve your goals, solving problems that affect children and their families and their communities that really translate to sustainable outcomes?
I talk about it as breadth and depth. I want to say loud and clear, I personally cannot take credit for anything. Everything that's happened in my career has been a team effort, has been a partnership. I just happen to sometimes be the one who was in the front of it. And that is really honest to goodness true. If we didn't have fabulous data scientists, we would not have been able, before the World Wide Web, to create a national child-focused crash surveillance system with an insurance company. Without fabulous epidemiologists, we wouldn't have designed it well. Without statisticians, we wouldn't have done that. And then move forward, without good engineers, we wouldn't have created a virtual driving assessment that's in primary care practices right now. When you're talking about driving, whether it's driving or car seats, engineering is important. And so you need to have the right tool, the right people, and the right place at the right time to be able to answer the question. And that's something we've been uniquely able to do within an environment with a very large population of patients on which to be able to participate in our research.
Can you tell us about the virtual driving assessments and how that evolved and how it's incorporated in primary care?
We discovered that by looking at the literature and looking at our data that a third of the adolescents who died in motor vehicle crashes. We wanted to understand why, because this is, again, this research to action cycle we have, identify the problem, understand the problem, and move forward. And we found out that the crashes were happening, the highest risk were in the first months of driving, and the teens did not know how to drive. Why was this? We began to talk to driving instructors and other people, and it just hit me, because the licensing test wasn't rigorous enough. You had to keep it safe enough that someone wasn't going to kill the other person who was doing the evaluation. And so I said, what was done in other areas? There's a virtual assessment. If you think about pilots and others, where they're putting them in scenarios that are too dangerous to have somebody drive or fly, you test it virtually. We created a virtual driving assessment to be able to see, can you handle the most serious crash scenarios? And if not, what are you doing wrong? This was a long line of research, finding the scenarios, building the tools, testing the tools, validating the tools, putting it in place in Ohio. And once I felt confident enough that we actually had a tool that could identify what people's challenges were, could predict whether or not someone was going to have a crash, all the rest of that stuff, I said, let's bring this into primary care. Because the goal of primary care is anticipatory guidance. We have the leading cause of death. Let's figure this out. And we're now in 18 clinics. And as part of primary care, as part of when an adolescent comes in, it's like, oh, here's your hearing, your vision, and your virtual driving assessment. And then they immediately get feedback on how they drive and how they can improve their driving, and links to videos to learn more about how to practice better with their parent, and you drive too closely, or you're not scanning well, or you're going through curves too quickly or whatever it might be. All the problems that we found in our research were why kids crash. It's really exciting to transform the model in a way that works with busy clinicians so that they can provide more value to their patients. And in this case, it's to our adolescent patients.
It's really a tangible outcome of a lot of work and really, really will have an impact on adolescent health.
Hope so.
What's your best advice for the next generation of pediatric injury researchers?
Be bold. Solve important problems. I see people understandably being nervous about getting promoted, getting funding. And I have been fortunate that if you have a really important problem you're trying to solve, you have really rigorous methods, you're going to find funding. So go after the big things. Even when no one else is, go after them because that's what the children need us to be doing. I was scared when I was an investigator. Am I going to get my funding? What am I going to do? But I found that much more satisfying to solve big problems. That's what we need to be doing at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Because if we're not going to do it, who's going to do it?
And lastly, something I like to ask all my guests. You were a medical student here and your PhD and then your pediatrics training. And then you've stayed as a faculty member and led these wonderful initiatives. What is it about CHOP and the Research Institute that's inspired you to build your career here?
It's a really good question. There is this idea that you can evolve and you're not pigeonholed into anything. That if you are going after something and it's really an important problem, you can take pivots, you can move in different places, and you can go through this without having to change jobs. I've worked with people all over the world. I just happened to do it from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. This idea that you can have a journey over your lifetime where you're going to be moving through a trajectory of where the science leads you. I would never, ever, ever have told you when I started my research that I would be part of a project that is setting up virtual driving assessments in primary care and having driving be part of practice of adolescence because it's a leading cause of death. I would never have been able to tell you that when I started. But the science led me there. I follow the problem, and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia is like, cool, go with it. The important part is that you can be an academic if you do good work and you solve important problems, and you're rigorous, and you publish, just keep going, because you're going to do just fine.
That's great. Thanks, Dr. Winston. It was such a pleasure having you with us today. It's always wonderful to hear about your work.
Thank you for letting me be here, for being so supportive of my work.
For more stories about the people of the Research Institute and the incredible work they're doing, visit Cornerstone, our official blog, at research.chop.edu/cornerstone blog. I'm Dr. Susan Firth. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time on Bench to Bedside.